Few have enjoyed a better start to their major league career than Fred Lynn. In fact, you could argue that he had the greatest rookie season of all time, with accolades unprecedented in baseball history. When his 16-year big league tenure came to a close, it featured 9 All-Star appearances, 4 gold gloves, and more than 300 home runs. But it's his rookie year of 1975 that remains his most recognized, both for his individual accomplishments and for being a part of one of the greatest World Series ever played. Let's start, Fred, with the 1975 season as a whole. The way that season transpired, with you winning the American League's Rookie of the Year and Most Valuable Player in the same season, the first to do it, and, of course, winning the American League pennant with the Red Sox, all of this happening with you fresh out of USC, did that raise your expectations, not just for the team, but for you personally?
I don't know that it raised it for me personally, because that's setting the bar pretty high. I mean, where do you go from there except for, you know, winning Game 7 of the World Series would have been the icing on the cake for me and the club. But I always knew that I had ability. I was obviously pretty surprised the way it played out my first year. But we had such a good team that, you know, I was never the focal point. And, you know, there were so many good players on our club and young players as well. I could just kind of do my thing and not get a lot of media attention for it, or, unlike today's world, it would be a totally different scenario. But I was kind of flying under the radar, so, you know, next year, I told everybody, you know, the press then, you know, you can't expect me to win MVP every year now, can you? But, you know, this was the Boston media, so they could.
In that season, you led the AL in doubles, runs scored, slugging percentage, finished second in the batting race with a .331 average, and you also won your first of 4 gold gloves. The Red Sox won 95 games, beat the Orioles by 4.5 in the AL East. Then you guys swept Oakland, the 3-time defending World Series champions, to win a right to play the 108-win Cincinnati Reds. Even though you had lost fellow rookie Jim Rice to injury at the end of the regular season, did beating a team like the caliber of the Oakland A's in that fashion that you did beat them give the team enough confidence to feel good heading into the World Series against the Reds, even though you were heavy underdogs?
I believe that we were so young. I knew how good Oakland was, but, you know, all the young guys, you know, were full of bravado, and, you know, we think that we can beat anybody. You know, maybe the veteran players probably were saying, okay, we got to knock these guys off. They're 3-time world champs, and we've got to beat them, especially at their place, and they've got a great pitching staff. But I remember during the season, we played them pretty tough. They were the other division, so we didn't see them very often, but we played them tough, and we matched up pretty well against their pitching staff. All our lefty hitters could hit their lefty pitching, and so that kind of neutralized that. And, you know, our pitching wasn't bad either. You know, we had some guys that could twirl the ball. But we went in there, and, gosh, every guy hit .350, seems like. And, well, we just kind of steamrolled them. I mean, the games were close, but it was like you're playing tennis and you win all the close points. That's what happened. Anytime we needed a hit, we got it. We needed to make a play, we made it. So we dispatched them pretty easily, and I believe that raised some eyebrows. And when Cincinnati came steamrolling into the series, I'm sure that they took note. You know, they probably thought that they would play Oakland. And then they said, well, who are these Red Sox guys? And, you know, they knew Yaz and Petrocelli and some of the older players, established guys. They really didn't know us because we never saw them. So I'm sure they thought that they would dispatch us like they did everybody else. But, you know, we gave them a heck of a series. And had we had Jimmy Rice for the series, I truly believe that we would have beaten them in 6. Not even gone Game 7. Because Jimmy's replacement, Juan Benitez, I don't even know if he got a hit during the series. And Jimmy was a main part of our offense. You know, he hit 4 or 5 in the lineup, and he picked that guy out of our lineup, and, you know, we're not as good. So, you know, we played him tough even without Jimmy, but like I said, if we had him, I truly believe that we would have beaten him.
Now, you talked about the pitching staff that you guys had. Louis Tiant went in game one, pitched, a four-hitter at Fenway, but the Reds countered by taking games two and three. Game three had a controversial tone to it when in the 10th, Reds pinch hitter Ed Armbrister and your catcher Carlton Fisk collided after a bunt in front of home plate. Interference was not called. Fisk's throw to second was high, and the Reds went on to win in that inning. What did you see on that play from your vantage point in center field?
Well, I had a great vantage point because the play's right in front of me. Anytime there's a bunt like that, my first move is coming in because I'm backing up second base for an overthrow. And I could see there was a collision right in front of the plate. I couldn't see who instigated it, but, you know, the rule is if you interfere with the fielder's line to the ball or his chance to make a play, you know, that's interference, whether it's intentional or not. So it was definitely a botch call. Larry Barnett was the home plate umpire, and I remember years after, every time he would umpire in Fenway, the fans never forgot, because they always announced the umpires, and now, you know, behind the plate, Larry Barnett, so they never forgot, and, you know, that was a key play. You know, Pudge was really upset. You know, Pudge is a big guy. You know, and if he stumbles, you know, because the guy is in his way, well, then he's really in his way. He's 6'3", 225. So, you know, it takes a little bit more than just a brush by to knock him off balance. So, you know, it was just a rub of the green, and it didn't go our way. But we still battled. We lost that game, but I don't know if that was the deciding factor.
You guys rallied to take game four, but lost game five, heading back to Fenway with Cincinnati up 3-2. Then came 3 days of rainouts. In hindsight, did that help your team regroup, considering they had won 3 of the last 4 and you guys could kind of relax in Boston to gear up for game six?
You know what? I think it's harder as the home team when you're getting rained out because you're not together. I mean, you go to the ballpark, and we didn't work out because it was raining so hard. We didn't even get on the field. We might have played catch a little bit, but that's about it. No hitting, no nothing. At least the Reds, you know, they're in a hotel. They can, you know, go out, have dinner, be together. When you're at home, you're with your families, or there's lots of people coming in for the series. And I remember it was like, oh, God, are we ever going to play this game? It had been a long season for me anyway. You know, I was just a rookie, and I'd never played that many games. And I was just saying, God, let's get on with this thing. You almost forget why you're there, because you're out of your rhythm. I don't know who had an advantage. I don't think any team really had one, to be honest with you. It didn't make us pull together or anything like that, because we weren't there. We weren't together. They were. But I know one thing. The outfield was a mess. They didn't have the drains like they do today. So it slowed everybody down. And, you know, balls that you could maybe normally get to, you couldn't get to because, you know, your feet, the water was coming over your shoes, and especially in right center.
Well, you did.
So that definitely came into play, especially in Game 7.
Well, you did get Game 6 off to a good start at the plate with a 3-run home run in the bottom of the first off Red starter Gary Nolan, and that was your first home run of the series. Did you feel at that moment that was kind of like a pinnacle moment of the season, a great regular season, and then on top of that, an important home run in an elimination game?
You know what? To be honest, I had, in the second half of the season, my power stats went way down. I still hit for average, and I was hitting a lot of balls from left field, but wasn't driving the ball like I did early in the season. I was down to about 175 pounds, maybe, or even less than that. You know, we didn't lift weights in those days, so, you know, I was running on fumes, to be honest. And when I hit that ball out in the first, I mean, it was 20 rows over the bullpen. And that's a bomb, especially when it's cold and damp. And I hit a ball that far, I don't think, since like April. So I probably was the most surprised guy in the place.
And there's a high fly ball deep to right field. Going back, Griffey, forget it. It's gone. And this place is rocking. And Tony, the words just out of your mouth, Fred Lynn got the rest, and he hit the deep home run in the bleachers.
And, yeah, it got the crowd into the game. It was really a big boost for us because you get 35,000 people going, oh, God, you know, and they need to win this game. And then got the fans into it. Our club was into it. So it was a big boost to us emotionally.
Well, then came a scary moment, tremendously scary moment for you in the top of the fifth, colliding with the center field wall after nearly making a catch on a drive off the bat of Ken Griffey.
And a fly ball deep to center field. Lynn going way back, and he can't make the play. It's off the wall. Evans will recover, and Lynn is not up. He has been shaken up. One run comes in. Here comes Rose with the second run, and Freddie Lynn is hurt in the corner in the dead center field. He must have hit his head against that wall, and he is really shaken up. And Darryl Johnson, trainer Charlie Moss, going out to center field. And I've never heard Fenway Park as silent as it is right now.
What were your immediate thoughts after that impact to the center field wall?
Well, I went down in a heap, as you know, everybody that ever saw that flip knows. And, you know, back in the day, that was concrete. You know, there was no padding except for maybe a half inch of paint. And what happened was when I turned to try to make the play, you know, I hit with my backside and I went down and everybody thought I was knocked out because I didn't move. But I was fully conscious, but I had no feeling from the waist down. So I was really concerned that I may have, broken my back or certainly injured it enough where I had no feeling. So I was pretty nervous and that's why I didn't move. And probably it seemed like it took forever, but 3 or 4 minutes went by, and I started to get that tingling sensation down my legs, like when you hit your funny bone. And so that's when the guys helped me up, and I was just kind of shaking it off. And, you know, I stayed in the game.
Right there, you saw that right foot slip off the wall, and that was the key, I think, that spun him around, and he really took a bad jar.
Tony, he has made several diving catches this year going to right and left center field. He has gone against the wall before. This is the first time we have seen Fred Lynn get hurt on any kind of a play in the outfield.
There it is. He just spun himself around. Amazing effort.
He's going to stay in.
That was a pretty scary moment, and one that, believe me, wasn't lost on all of baseball because, you know, all the big guys were there, the commissioner and everybody else, and everybody saw it. And the next year, they started putting padding on the walls. So, you know, one of my legacies to the game is that, you know, I was directly responsible for getting padding on all walls.
Plenty of outfielders are happy for that. That penchant for diving for fly balls, colliding with fences, became your reputation as an outfielder, and a lot of players won't take those chances for his team or his pitcher. What was your attitude behind that mentality, and did you ever feel like letting up a bit after a few injuries?
You know, I'm a football guy. You know, I played football my whole life, and you know, I went across the middle for a bad throw where a middle linebacker is going to take your head off whether you catch the ball or not. You learn from that. So, playing center field, my thought process was that I just wanted to catch everything. And if I know where the wall is, and I know how to take hits, I know how to cushion the blow with my backside, and I know how to do those things. You know, I dove for basketballs, loose balls on the floor, or bad passes from my quarterback. So I knew how to do those things. So it really wasn't a stretch for me to make those kind of plays or attempt them. Yeah, I got banged up for it, and I remember more than one of my managers would tell me, listen, you need your bat in the lineup. You know, don't be taking crazy chances. And I'd say, yeah, okay, whatever you say. And I'd go out there and do the things that I do. It's just not right. You know, if I have a chance to catch the ball, I'm going to do everything that I can to make that play. And to be honest, that's what people remember me for. They don't remember me so much for my hitting, but they remember those plays.
Now going back to Game 6, the 3-0 lead that you provided did not last. Cesar Geronimo home run in the 8th made it 6-3. After that home run, what was the feeling amongst the other players on the Red Sox? What was the confidence level at that point?
Well, we had beaten, like I said, we beat the A's, and we're a pretty good club, and just because we were down, that didn't mean we were out. And when you're down like that, the attitude of the club is, all right, first guy gets on base, got to get on base. And then that's, you grind it out, first guy gets on base, okay, got something going. Next guy gets on base, okay, now we got something going. The crowd gets in it, and that's how rallies start. But the first guy's got to, they have to grind it out to get on base. And we did that. And then Bernie pinch hit, and I was on second. Mm-hmm. So I was one of the guys that got on. And when Bernie goes up there, he got two strikes on him pretty quickly, and Raleigh Eastwood was throwing, and he threw like a cutter inside. And I didn't think Bernie was going to swing, and at the last second, he just kind of dug it out of Bench's glove, and the ball went about 2 feet. I went, oh, man. That was not a good hack. And then the next pitch he threw out, you know, over the plate, and this is where Bernie liked it. And he smoked it to center, and I was turning around watching the ball from second base, and I knew it was gone. And, you know, I don't know if I was happier than Bernie, but that, you know, it tied it up, and the crowd got back in it again. And it was just a great moment for baseball and Boston.
You know, with all due respect to what Carlton Fisk would do later on, that home run by Bernie Carbo, to me, and I don't know how you feel, is just as important, if not more, of a more significant home run, considering the circumstances that you were behind by three instead of with Fisk being tied.
Well, yeah, I mean, it gets us to the point now the flow is, all the momentum is on our side. You know, they had a speed. They knew they had a speed. They got their best pitcher in there, and boom, we tie the game. That just doesn't happen to them. I guarantee you, I don't know how many games they won during the year, but I bet maybe less than a handful guys did what Bernie did. Mm-hmm. And so that was a huge moment. Yeah, if he doesn't do that, even if he just hits a double, you know, that just scores one, maybe two, and we still got to get another one. So that was a big, big time hit. It just doesn't get any bigger than that when you're down by three and you come up hit a pitch with a three-run homer.
Now, both teams traded off chances to win. You guys had a chance to win in the bottom of the ninth. George Foster denied Denny Doyle's hope to score on your sacrifice fly. Then Dwight Evans made a spectacular catch in right field, which became a double play and ended the top half of the 11th. Was there a point, and I don't know if players ever kind of feel this, they rarely do, but was there a point for you that you and your teammates realized the magnitude of this game?
I know the other side did, and some of the veteran players. I know Pete Rose was, you know, had made some comments. Is this a great game and stuff like that? I said, I'm a rookie, and I'm in center field. I'm out by myself. I'm not talking to anybody but the grass. So, you know, I wasn't thinking about those things. You know, I was just thinking, you know, we got to get this guy out. We got to do that. And Dewey makes that play. I was backing him up, so I knew he had room to make it. I didn't know if he had time to get up and make the catch. But when he made that, and it's another instance where, okay, they have momentum. We snatched it from them. And now, you know, the ball's in our court. So there was lots of ebb and flow in that game. And when you play extra inning games like that, you know, obviously the advantage is the home club, but you still have to do it. You still have to perform. And we made some great plays offensively and defensively to get to the 12th inning.
Mm-hmm. Then we get to the famous bottom of the 12th, still tied at 6. Carlton Fisk is the leadoff batter. You're on deck. You two had a conversation prior to Fisk's at bat. What happened there?
Well, we were watching the pitcher warm up, and I think he'd thrown two shutout innings prior to that. And he's a sinker baller. Punch is a low ball hitter, and Punch says, you know, I'm going to hit one off the wall, and you drive me in. Well, he forgot about the part where I'm supposed to drive him in, and he kind of did it all himself. But back in the day, our on-deck circle was fairly close to home plate, but invariably, if I didn't know the pitcher, and I had been a rookie, I didn't know anybody, so I'd scoot as close as I could towards home just to see if I could see how the ball was moving. So I had a real good view of the pitch, and when he hit it, I knew immediately it had distance, but I didn't know if it was going to hook. and just got inside the pole. And, you know, I was elated, not only because we won, but I didn't have to hit again. And I was, I forget how, you know, late it was, and it was after midnight for sure. So, you know, I actually, so it's already into the next day. So, you know, then we play that next night, which is that day. So we actually played two games in one day when you look at it like that. But it was pretty doggone exciting, I'll tell you that.
Now, that pitch, or the home run by Fisk, was off of Pat Darcy on the second pitch of the inning.
Yeah, that's right, Pat Darcy.
And what do you remember the clubhouse being like afterwards? Was it a sense that you were going to ride this victory and the momentum that came with it into Game 7?
I think that, you know, guys were just happy to get to Game 7. You know, it was a struggle. you know, like I said, it was a knockdown, drag-out series, and just when you thought you had somebody nailed down, the other team would come back. And that was like that way in just about every game that we played. Whoever went out with the early lead ended up losing the game. So no leads were safe. You never felt comfortable. And I think we were cautiously optimistic. Obviously, we're happy that we're playing. I probably was more optimistic than anybody else because of my background, my history. When I was at the University of Southern Cal, I played in the College World Series three times, and we won three national titles. And then I got to AAA, came up at the end of 73, won the AAA World Series. So when I got to a title game, I'd never lost one before. So I was feeling pretty good about it, to be honest. But I was good in those situations, and the teams that I played for was always good in those situations. So, yeah, I was pretty confident that we could pull this one out.
Your teammates might have thought you were a good luck charm.
Yeah, well, you know, I thought that. And then when it didn't work out, I didn't even know how to react because I'd never been on that side of the corn before. I'd never been in that locker room. I'd always been on the other side. So it was a shock. It was a shock to my system.
Now, Game 7 is very much underrated in terms of its greatness, for obvious reasons. In that game, Red Sox led 3-0 as late as the fifth with Bill Lee on the mound. The Reds, of course, would come back, tie the game in the seventh, score once in the ninth, and hold on for the 4-3 win. And that the game-winning hit was just in front of you off of Joe Morgan. It fell just in front of you. What do you remember about that particular hit?
Well, like I said, you know, with the rain, all the rain that we had, it was a really, really slow outfield. And back in those days, you know, especially being a rookie, I only had two or three pairs of shoes. And they were all soaked, waterlogged. And they had leather bottoms. So they got heavy. And it's not like today's shoes were, they were light and well built. These weren't. They were cloggers. Mm-hmm. So if he hits that ball at their place on turf, I catch it. There's no question in my mind that I can get to it. But you know, I had to respect his little bit of power. So you know, I'm deeper than I really want to be in right center. But you have no chance to throw anybody out on a base hit because the ball hardly even gets to you. That's yeah. So. You know, you're kind of in between there. Normally, if this guy's on second, I peed in because I want to throw the guy out. But the field was so wet and so slow that it was difficult to do that. And I got the ball on one hop, but I was probably two steps slower on that field under those conditions.
Now that it's been 40 years, has any of the sting worn off from that Game 7 loss? And can you look back with a broader perspective and come to realize your participation in what many say is the greatest game of all time with regards to Game 6 and a series that had a tremendous impact nationally?
Yeah, you know what? A lot of people think we won that thing, but there's nothing like winning, and nothing can replace that for me. I came close a number of times and was always on the short end. But that's the closest I've come. You know, Game 7, ninth inning, losing by one. You know, that's hard to take, and I still think about it. There's still a hole in my career because for me, my team didn't win. All the other stuff that I did individually, I'd sacrifice all that here, take it here. I'd rather have a ring than all those other things. But having said that, it's gratifying to know that we were a part of something that was bigger than the individuals that were in there. I mean, that series put baseball back on the map. It really did. People were getting bored with baseball. The football was kind of overtaking us in popularity. But after that series, baseball just shot up in popularity. And it was because of that series and the way it was played and the guys that played in it. Game six, like you said, and it was voted on by MLB as the greatest game ever. And to be able to say that I was a part of it, and that's pretty cool. That's gratifying, but I'd still rather have to win.
Fast forward now to 1983. As a member of the California Angels, you participated in your ninth All-Star game, and in that game at Old Comiskey Park, hit the first and only grand slam in All-Star history, a drive to right field off of Atlee Hammaker. Did you know at the time that it was the first All-Star grand slam when you hit it?
No, I had no idea. I was just pissed that they walked Robin Yount to load the bases to get to me. You don't see that much in All-Star competition, and it only happened to me one other time prior to that, and that was in the College World Series, and I hit a home run off the lefty from Texas to beat him 4-1. So, that stuff kind of gets me riled up, and I really am able to focus all my attention on that particular pitcher. Nobody likes to have somebody walk ahead of them to get to you. And there were lots of reasons that was big for me, but I'm from Chicago. I had a lot of people there. We'd lost like a million in a row to the National League as an American League. We finally broke that streak, and that was all those things played into that. That was pretty gratifying because that was the first All-Star game I had won in nine tries.
Yount at first, Carew at second, Trio at third. Two out. And he drives it to deep right. That throws Murphy way back, and there it is, the first grand slam in All-Star history. The first grand slam home run in All-Star history, hit by that man, smiling Fred Lynn.
I recall from watching the replay of you raising your right arm after the home run, and as you said, certainly a great personal moment, but I think being a part of so many All-Star games, being a part of nine and losing all of them, I'm assuming that the excitement that you had after that home run partially had to do with the fact that you kind of put the team well ahead and you knew you were going to win your first
That's
All-Star
right.
game
That's
of the team since 1971, I believe.
Yeah, that's had nothing to do with me. It was like, all right, we're going to win one. We had them on the ropes a couple of times. And I'd have a fair amount of success in All-Star competition. So, yeah, I was happy. They put us up 7-1 or something like that. And I knew we were going to win that game. And I said, yeah, because I never did that in my whole life. Display any kind of emotion or try to show anybody up or anything like that. But I was pretty happy for the American League because back in the day, the American League president would call us up. He would fail and say, hey, we got to win this game. We get personal calls from the president. And everybody was tired of hearing about the National League superiority and how they're going to beat us again and blah, 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 blah. So that was nice to get the monkey off our back.
The American League went on to win that game 13-3. Not surprisingly, Fred won MVP honors, and no one has hit a grand slam in the All-Star game since. A great thanks to Fred Lynn for joining us. He'll also be part of our 40th anniversary retrospective on that classic 1975 World Series, which will air in October and hopefully feature other special guests. For Baseball As It Was, I'm Brian Wright.